He's the editor-in-chief of GoDucks.com as Penguins started the Cup Chase 3-1, beat Columbus. You can follow on Twitter, I guess pick one, at Duck Football or at GoDucksMosley. Rob Mosley checks in. Rob, how are things going?
Well, as you noted, the Penguins are off to a victorious start in the Cup playoffs, so I can't ask for anything more.
Wow. Your wants have become simplified over time as you get a little bit older.
Absolutely.
So, 36 hours, Oregon learns they lose Tyler Dorsey, Dylan Brooks, Casey Benson. So tell me, behind the scenes, what happened in Phoenix that apparently scared every member of the Duck basketball team away?
Well, I think, these things happen in stages. Kind of connecting the dots a little bit. I think you look back to early in the year when Casey Benson was a starter, and then Peyton Pritchard came on pretty quickly. Casey really did an admirable job, I thought, of accepting a role of, you know, energy guy off the bench, come in, hit a three-pointer or two, take a charge, play 12, 15 minutes. But nobody wants to be the come in and take a charge guy off the bench. I think particularly, as he looks forward to the timeline of his basketball career, if I'm him, I've got my undergraduate degree. Yeah, I might be interested in going somewhere where I can play 30, 35 minutes and really soak up the experience. Dylan Brooks, I think, really matured over the course of this year into he kind of hit his ceiling, I think, as a college player almost. The analogy I've been using when I think about his decision is kind of like Braylon Addison from football a couple years ago. In either case, could they have stayed another year? Absolutely. But would they have changed their draft stock dramatically? I don't think so. I think they kind of were who they were.
Yeah, that's a good point. I agree with
that. In both cases, there were some limitations, but, their kind of stock wasn't going to get any higher. So, don't risk an injury. Go try to make some money. Tyler Dorsey, hey, that's a guy who hadn't scored 20 points in back-to-back games the entire regular season and then did it in every game of the postseason, Pac-12 and NCAA tournaments. So you want a guy whose stock is at an all-time high. That's probably went into his thought process as well. So, yeah, the decisions all came down at once, but I think if you look back over the course of the season, you can see how sort of incrementally each guy probably came to the decision that moving on was the right thing for him.
While each case, when it's presented, it's like, I get that. But just in the case of Tyler Dorsey in particular, just no right or wrong answer, were you surprised he decided to come out?
I wasn't. I mean, I think, just the chatter around Tyler since before he got here was that he was a guy who, thought his potential had some potential at the next level and was interested in pursuing that kind of at the earliest time possible. So, like you say, right or wrong, that seemed to be the thought process there, around Tyler. And so it certainly wasn't shocking to see him jump at the opportunity, again, after having such a high-profile postseason, try to take advantage of that. Is there things he could work on? Sure.
You know,
he could become a better ball handler, all that. But, there's a guy, too, strike while the iron's hot. He felt like this is the time to go, so... Jordan Bell's another guy. If Jordan Bell could add a 10-footer to his game, a 12-footer to keep people honest and then take a step and go to the hole against guys, man, what a monster he'd be. But on the other hand, he's a guy who became kind of a national darling for being kind of a do-it-all guy and the way he stepped up after Boucher's injury. So if you're talking about a guy, again, whose profile might never be higher, if I'm Jordan Bell, that probably factors into my thinking as well with him.
All right, so we get ready for the new look Ducks of 2017-2018. Talk with Rob Mosley, GoDucks.com. Let's get to football. We learned that the practices are actually held. People could see them now. they're headed to Portland Saturday. Putting the program on display, I know you hear from like every Duck fan around the globe. Is this going to be a pretty big deal? Do you expect a big turnout up there?
I do, yeah. I was talking to some people the other day at practice, some of the alums. There's some guys, Brent Haberle, Ryan DiPaolo, who are involved in some camps up there, and they came down and were watching practice yesterday and were saying they expect, one guy threw out the number 10,000 people. I don't know if it'll be that many, but the weather's supposed to be perfect. So far the forecast didn't call for rain. I understand the Jesuit. I've never been there, but it's a campus that's set up to accommodate a lot of people. So I think, yeah, I'm looking forward to being pretty impressed by the crowd that comes out. And I think obviously there's a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of excitement about Willie Taggart and his coaching staff and the energy they've brought in. So and a lot of people I think want to get a firsthand look at what that looks like. So I think they're planning to put on a show. It's not going to quite be the spring game, but I think it's going to be a situational scrimmage as they're terming it, and you're going to see some hitting, and you're going to see some big plays, and you're going to see Justin Herbert, you're going to see Royce Freeman, you're going to see Troy Dye, who, having moved inside, I think is going to have about 150 billion tackles this season, and it should be pretty fun.
That per game, that's got to be a record.
I would think it would. I want to look that up before I go that far, though. I want to be sure.
We've got our staff on it.
Very good.
Kind of an abstract question, but, you've obviously seen the practices, kind of get the vibe, if you will, previous years. You mentioned the excitement with the new guys out there barking orders. And it's not a matter of better or worse, but as a real up-close observer, what kind of sticks out as some of the differences that are, these practices from what we saw under Coach Helf?
I've heard from a lot of people who have gone to practices that they say they think the energy level's higher.
Okay.
That has not been my perception. I think the energy level is different. I think, obviously, this staff is younger and communicates with the guys on a different level, communicates them, they're just in a little more of a familiar level. Than maybe guys like a Steve Greatwood did or a John Neal. There's a different type of energy, but I don't know if it's necessarily more of an energy. I don't know if there's, this staff. I mean, John Neal was a guy who made a lot of noise during practice. You never didn't hear him. Tom Osborne, the tight ends coach, was another guy who, you never forgot where he was on the field. So I'm a little hesitant to say I think there's more energy or it's any louder. I think, I do think the guys are excited. The guys have bought into this staff. And that's, at this point in the year, kind of all you can ask for. I mean, you want guys to believe in the people they're playing for. For me, for my money, the biggest, most noticeable difference in practice is the fact that Taggart is calling plays on offense when they go 11-on-11. And by the same token, the defensive staff is calling plays as well. And I certainly see the benefit of that for the coaching staff getting a feel for their players and for the players getting a feel for the mechanics of running in plays and calling plays. It does slow things down. The last staff did a lot of stuff off a predetermined script.
Right.
So they could really, really rep things quickly. These guys are sacrificing tempo right now for the sake of getting a feel for play calling with this group and all of that. So I think the idea will be that they ramp up the tempo, come fall and certainly, as they get closer to the season. I think they do plan to use tempo to their advantage. But I think the one difference you'd notice right now is it just doesn't feel as fast in terms of just getting reps in as it did previously.
All right. When the season was about to get underway last year, I think one of the surprise stories was, Justin Herbert's the two behind Prukop. You mentioned, I think you wrote that Travis Johnson was working with the twos recently, and after last year's spring game, the word was kind of he was in the mix to start. So what are some of the noticeable differences in the guy who never saw the field last year, maybe to what you've seen so far during practice in 2017?
You're talking about Travis Johnson? I think, he can still be pretty up and down. The accuracy has never been, consistently there for him, and that's really what's held him back. And that's been the case going back into high school. I think what he's doing right now is having longer sustained stretches where he's more accurate, and, his ceiling is starting to look a little bit higher, and he's an electric athlete, so when you complement that with accurate passing, he's really going to be able to open some eyes. So I think, the stretches are just a little more sustained where you start to think, hey, this guy's got the tools. But, make no mistake, the gap between Herbert and everybody else is significant. I don't think there's any question who the starter is. I think I understand the coaches are wanting to be hesitant to say that for a lot of different reasons.
Right.
Herbert just, looks like a man among boys to some extent right now. And if you look at just, for me, I don't try to go in and judge arm strength and accuracy and footwork. And I'm not conceited enough to think I know what any of that is. What I look at when I'm looking at my practice notes, I'm looking at when they go 11-on-11, who is it quarterback when the offense is scoring touchdowns? And it's always Justin Herbert. So he puts points on the board in the way that other guys aren't able to do. Now, you know, granted, they're running the second and third offense, but they're going against the second and third defense.
Sure.
So, Herbert is just routinely putting points up on the board and with consistency that the other guys just aren't able to match.
Scoring touchdowns would be high on my list, checking a quarterback's resume.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, there's probably some, you know, it's funny because in baseball, I'm kind of a stat head. I go by all the other stats. Like, I scoff at wins, you know, for pitchers.
Right.
But it's, you know, and so maybe that makes me a hypocrite. But, yeah, you know, I don't know about all the other stuff. But when Justin Herbert's on the field, the offense scores touchdowns, and that's good enough for me.
I think you're going to get a lot of votes there. Lastly, kind of off the request line, you mentioned Troy Dye moving inside. I always connect really good Oregon teams to kind of playmakers, game changers at linebacker. So if Dye is the constant, who are the variables? Who are some names that maybe we're not familiar with who might be in the mix for time at the linebacker position?
Well, you know, you look at the style of defense they're playing and the way Dye fits into it, and he has the potential to be a Jeremy Asher, a Peter Sermon. If you look back over the years, you know, those weak side inside linebackers that just got a ton of tackles. But yeah, the thing those guys always had, you know, Jeremy Asher had Rich Rule taking up space. Peter Sermon had Matt Smith, you know, banging heads with running backs and fullbacks and tight ends, you know, freeing up him, Peter, to go make tackles. So, you know, who's going to be that big middle linebacker that helps free up Troy Dye? That's still a question mark. A.J. Hodgins is playing a lot with the ones. You know, he's a smaller guy, so you do wonder how his body's going to hold up. Danny Mattingly's been sick the last few days. You know, he's a guy kind of people have been waiting on coming for a while now. Maybe this system will suit him better, but we haven't been able to see that since I think he was only out there the very first day. There's some freshmen coming in, too, that I think will be given opportunities. But, yeah, I think that's a question mark. There's some talent at the outside positions. Jonah Moy, I think the outside linebacker in a 3-4 suits him the best. Jimmy Swain is very athletic out there. Keith Simmons is a guy who played last year as a true freshman inside, but now is outside. I think that suits him a little better. But really, yeah, you know, when you're talking about your weak side inside linebacker, you're talking about who's that complement, the middle inside linebacker that's going to compliment him, and I'm not sure we know that yet. And yeah, you know, for Dye to be an Asher Sermon type producer, he needs that Rule Matt Smith guy, and I do think that's yet to be identified.
All right. Good stuff as always, Rob. GoDucks.com. The Twitter handle's @DuckFootball, @GoDucksMosley. Always appreciate your time. You and the crew travel safe to and from Portland, and look forward to catching up soon. Thanks a lot, Rob.
Sounds great. You're there, Steve. Appreciate it.
All right, take it easy.